as inside the humans, so outside in the world. This from Carl Johan Kalaman. He's written the Paradigm Shift Trilogy, and we're going to discuss Volume 1, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, which we started last week. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
All of us are to some extent guided by this bigger plan, and I wish people would know more about that and see themselves as contributors to a divine plan more than they actually do today.
The Mayan calendar is a vehicle for your investigation, and you broaden it so much that you recognize that many early systems, whether it was in Mexico or whether it was in India or China or Europe, anywhere, you noticed how there was a sacred geometry, for instance, and you do call it the eightfold partitioning, and it is also represented in the actual physical brain. The ramifications of that, you talk about the art, the pre and post eightfold partitioning in art. And maybe you could share a little bit about that.
All of this theory, you might say, comes back to the explanation that the Maya themselves were given to why they had developed a long count calendar that started 5,130 years before our current time. Basically, 3,115 BC is the starting point of their long count. And they actually provided an explanation to this. They said that what they called the first father, you know, what we probably would just refer to as the divine or so, he then erected the world tree. And the world tree on the level of our Earth is really the polar axis. What became visible was this eight partitioning of the Earth. What that comes down to is that a kind of a grid emanating from the polar axis, a grid that created our experience of the four directions all over the world, became activated and on a global scale. And as we're all in resonance with this global phenomenon, people everywhere on the planet were started to change at that particular point in time. Now, that's what the Mayas are saying, but we can actually, when we look at what happened at that particular point in time, we will see that people in different parts of the world will change. And we will notice the introduction of straight lines and perpendicular lines that really didn't exist before. We will notice them very, very dramatically in the building of the Egyptian pyramids. But at the same time as the Egyptian pyramids were built, pyramids were also built in so far distant places, and Peru and Mongolia. So somehow all over the world, the people at that point in time started to erect structures that that had the straight lines, so that were organized by straight and perpendicular lines. And when you think about it, this whole thing with a straight line is really, I think it is in this movie 2001, a space odyssey that where, you know, they come to some planet and they see this monolith that has perfectly straight lines. And the immediate conclusion that you will draw if you would come to a foreign planet and saw a straight line is that here there must be some civilization. We know that this is true. We know that straight lines, perpendicular lines, that kind of a structure is associated with higher civilization. And so that straight lines, they also provide sort of a framework, a structure for reality. And they also then has had a large influence on how art has been created before and after this particular shift point. Because there is art, there is much older art. There is art from the cave paintings that go back maybe 40,000 years from our current time. But that art, when you look at these animals, these bisons, these aurochs, these rhinos, and so forth, that are portrayed in the caves of southern France and Spain, it's very beautiful art. You really feel the souls of these animals. But on the other hand, you notice that it doesn't have the kind of a structure that art will have at later point in times. So, for instance, in Altamira, which is the first of the cave painting sites that were discovered, the animals are sort of floating around on the cave walls, and there's no vertical or horizontal orientation of the animals. And if you go to Lascaux, which I have visited myself, you have these animals, they're sort of falling. There is a falling cow, and there is the horse that is sort of upside down, and so forth. And all this tells us that at that early point, before this shift that we talked about 5,000 years ago, people's minds were not structured along a vertical and horizontal in the same way as it later came to be. And so when the shift comes 5,000 years ago, what happens is that people are starting to frame in, they create boundaries for the kind of art which becomes very visible among the Egyptians. And there is a clear vertical, horizontal perspective in the art that was produced by the Egyptians and Sumerians and the people in Indus Valley and so forth. And from that point and onward, there is an evolution of art that increasingly becomes more, we would say, more accurate in terms of the geometric perspective. Its most advanced expression, it will come only with the last Baktun, starting in the early 1600s of this time, basically the Renaissance, where suddenly the artists are really acquiring a depth perspective in their art. And the way to understand this is that their minds actually changed. It wasn't like they as individuals came up with a new way of presenting a depth perspective in the art. No, they, as well as all of us, are in resonance with a global mind that then underwent a shift which had a very significant geometric aspect and a more advanced geometry, you might say. And as they came in resonance with this new mind, their art became also expressions of this, and their art became more advanced in terms of producing a depth perspective, and it became truly realistic, you might say.
Yes. Well, I was just going to say it's going to be impossible in this interview, of course, to relate all of the tangents and connections that you draw in your book, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. But I think it's so important that they are acknowledged, because people, especially now, and this is all we can, or I can speak from anyway, you know, they get stuck in thinking their way of thinking, or this is the way things are. But you so beautifully relate how from the cave art, their self-awareness was so different, and the ego, or the establishment of the ego, and how these ancients, perhaps they were in the cave in like a vision quest, and perhaps they were in the cave because that was a safe place from where they lived maybe all the time, which was fight or flight. And so a relief from that fight or flight allowed for a shift, perhaps, or it allowed for a respite and to connect with the soul rather than just be in the, I need to live, so I need to run from this tiger or whatever else was going on.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. As you're saying, there's so many things that are brought together through this perspective based on the Mayan calendar that it cannot be at all covered in an interview like this. But I do appreciate that you just bring up art, because it to many people that would seem like something completely different from what we have been talking about, but it isn't. It's also a human expression. It also comes from the human mind, and or is influenced by the human mind, and the human mind is what this book is all about. And there are many other people that talk about shifts in consciousness and so forth at the current time. But, you know, if we are to do that and be serious about it, we really have to look upon how do shifts in consciousness look in previous eras. And what this work represents is an attempt to chart out how the entirety of human evolution actually is a reflection of the evolution of different states of consciousness. And the cave painters that you talked about, they were, I believe, always in a state of consciousness that we would now look upon as shamanic, really with a very little separation between themselves or between them and nature and so forth. But that's not the state of consciousness that we are regularly here. We will have to do things at the current time if we want to come to such a shamanic state. We can do that, but that requires some kind of a decoupling of the mind. But it's all about changing shifts in consciousness. History is a result of changing shift in consciousness. This is essentially a new way of looking at history.
Absolutely. And you talk in your book about misleading views of the origin of mind is disempowering. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there are many aspects to that. I mean, if you go to the academically established view, the view is essentially that the mind is a product of the brain. And this is the opposite. What I'm presenting is the very opposite. The view that I'm presenting is that the mind is something that our brains, you might say, download from the core of the earth. Why would it be false to say that the mind is created by the brain? Well, I would say that, you know, if each one of us would be creating our own mind, we would be very hard-pressed to understand each other. You can only fantasize about it. Anyone who has had any kind of spiritual experiences in their lives, they will have had the kind of experiences that the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung would talk about as synchronicities. In other words, these amazing events when somebody you're thinking of is calling at that very moment, or somebody that you have something undealt with will turn up and in the streets you're walking 5 times in a day until you realize that I have to deal with this particular issue or this particular person. Things that are, you would say, statistically impossible. It just wouldn't happen if our universe was created by the kind of random events that established science still looks upon. For many people, these kind of synchronicities is just their way of life. They happen all the time. This would never happen if each one of us created our own mind. The only reason that it happens is that we're all connected to one and the same global mind. Yes. And that connection will bring us together. It will create events that are statistically impossible in our lives, but yet, you know, the more you observe them, the more you become aware of these kind of events, the more you become part of this larger divine plan, and it serves as a kind of guidance to you. And so that's part of what I it's just life becomes more meaningful if you realize that you are part of this global mind that evolves according to a certain time plan, and you can see your own individual life and whatever happens in that as part of this larger picture.
Yes. Within this framework, then, Carl, how do you speak to the fact, you know, okay, let's take today. I mean, there are so many people that maybe have more money, more freedom, and they're heading into the new age. They're doing all the workshops. They're meditating. They're doing yoga. They're you know, some of them are doing their hard work every day, but still connecting toward that same spiritual focus. And then you have other people who are, you know, just like some people follow politics, you know, other people will follow their 9-to-5 and then their beer at the end of the day and their family and all of these things. And there's no right or wrong, or one is better than the other. But there's a huge discrepancy in the times.
Yeah. Well, that, I believe, has to do with the fact that even though my book, in order to make the point, deals with essentially one of the Mayan creation waves, which is the long count wave that started civilization 5,100 years ago. Now, that is a very good wave to study, because we have enough of insight, we have enough of historic information to really come out and see clearly, absolutely, we are part of this wave, and that's how the human mind develops and so forth. But in reality, it's not the only wave, and this is something that I will come back to in the third volume of this trilogy. There are 9 waves, and so the so-called long count wave that has created civilization, that's the 6th of these waves. And if you go down to Guatemala or Mexico and go to the Mayan temple sites that have, you will find that in their midst, they will almost always, or at least the significant sites like Chichen Itza, Palenque, Tikal, and several others, they will have a 9-storied pyramid in their midst, and that's because this number 9 is very significant here. There's a significance to the fact that they're built in 9 levels, because these 9 levels reflect 9 waves of evolution And as you climb to the top of the pyramid, the waves will have increasingly higher frequency. And the ninth wave is the top wave. That's the wave that was activated last. It was activated only in 2011. And then there's an eighth wave that was activated in 1999. And these are new waves bringing new states of consciousness to humanity, new possibilities. And they have evolved on top of the earlier waves. So at the current time, there are nine different waves running in parallel, creating our reality. And in a sense, we have a choice as to which one of these waves that we will be in resonance with, that we will be shaped by, you might say. Especially the eighth and the ninth wave, the highest waves, the ones that were most recently activated, and the ones that the people you mentioned who practice yoga, et cetera, are most in tune with or in resonance with, they are different from the earlier waves that are more, that will create more materialistic people. Part of the purpose of civilization is to create a physical, material civilization. But really, there is a choice, I believe. None of these waves will automatically be imposed upon us. So if one person says that I intend to become an embodiment of oneness, I intend to go where the ninth wave, the highest wave of the pyramid, the wave with the highest frequency, if you say that you intend to do that, and of course you have to really mean it as well, and commit yourself to it, you will start on a path in life that will bring you to a different kind of habits, different realities than those that stay on lower waves. And some people are sort of set in the way of one of these waves. What I want to emphasize here is that the role of choice and intention in what wave we are going to be shaped by. And what I also want to emphasize is that when this ninth wave was activated, the wave then that doesn't have any filters, the wave that allows for a deeper unity with the divine, a deeper unity with the other humans, with animals, with nature, and so forth. That wave was activated only in 2011, and it presents a completely new possibility to humanity. It presents a possibility that simply did not exist on a massive scale before.
The part of life that I love, and this goes back to our beginning, when you said, oh, I saw this sign, I think I'll go to Mexico and trip around a little bit and learn some Spanish. We can have our intention and make a decision, I'm going to go do yoga and I'm going to create more of a light inside myself. And then there's those that read a little sign and go to Mexico and they're along for the ride before they even know it.
Yes.
It was so fascinating also in your book when you were talking about the various resonances of the brain with the Earth's atmospheric geophysical system, and that's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild. I'm glad that you see this and notice this, because it is so compelling, I would say. And I haven't heard anyone who really argues with that. It's mostly, you know, that the large group of the medical establishment, they simply do not want to deal with these kind of things. But they couldn't argue with it, because it is really so compelling to see how our different brain waves that has been known for quite some time now, that how they are connected to the different shells in the Earth's geophysical system. And what this tells us then is that, you know, whatever is in our minds is really not something that that is produced by our brains in isolation. It tells us in a completely compelling way that our brains are in resonance and with the earth. And that's why I also have argued so strongly that we're part of this same global mind. And I could add here that the beginning of this was really the observation that was made by some people that, you know, the so-called Schumann resonance, which is an electromagnetic standing wave at the surface of the Earth, it has the same frequency, essentially 7.5 hertz. It has the same frequency as our brains will have when we are in the alpha wave, in the relaxed state of mind. And so that's an interesting observation, and it's sort of a little bit logical, because after all, the surface of the Earth is our home, and so if our brains are in resonance with that surface, we might feel at peace and we might feel at home, which is what we usually do if we go into this alpha state of brain waves. But what I've done here is to expand on this and not just look at that the surface area, but actually see that all of the different shells in the Earth's inner system, including the mantle, the outer core, and the inner crystalline core, that they are also associated with frequencies that we will then see reproduced in the frequencies of our brain waves.
So the brain wave that meets up with the core is what?
Well, that would be the gamma waves. These are when we are in resonance with the core, our mind is crystalline, like the inner core is a crystal, so to speak. So that's our alert state. That's the state that you and I are at this very moment. Whereas when we go out in space, so to speak, that's when our minds get down to theta or delta waves that are very low frequency waves, and you get into kind of a dream state, because space has no real structure. There's anything may be connected there and so forth. So it's there are degrees of structure even that are associated with these different levels of the Earth geophysical system.
I guess the one thing I wanted to bring up, you mentioned that this information translates in a way into greater responsibility and greater opportunity. And for me, I'm in total agreement with that. And I really do feel that this greater responsibility equals a greater freedom as well.
I can only agree with that, and I would also like to emphasize that this information, it gives us a deeper sense of belonging, belonging to the divine, belonging to a meaningful time plan, and when you have that, there is a certain kind of security and feeling of peace that comes with that knowledge. So that would be what I'd like to add to what you already said.
It's quite a pleasure to speak with you, Carl, and I definitely look forward to volume 2 and 3 of the trilogy, and I hope you'll join us again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, volume 1 of the Paradigm Shift Trilogy, from Carl Johan Kalaman. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.